KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Inner Richmond.
Lower Haight.
Burlingame.
Mission.
Potrero Hill.
Russian Hill since 1999.
Coming up, we hear about one constituency that still won't have access to marijuana when it's legalized for recreational use next month. Kids who need their cannabis medication at school.
We have these pre-measured. So this is the THC. And so every seizure, we give her one of these. It's just oil, and you drop her in front of her gums before her teeth.
Then entrepreneurs getting into the marijuana biz these days are bringing money and new ideas to the table.
So that would be a club that charges a monthly membership and allows them to come in and enjoy sort of a country club style atmosphere.
We're exploring fresh angles on cannabis in California today on Cross Currents. On January 1st, it'll be legal for adults 21 and over to possess and purchase recreational marijuana. So you might think that's the end of the story on access. But there's a hidden constituency that will still face barriers. Kids who rely on medication made from cannabis. Many parents across the state already use medical cannabis to ease their children's repeated seizures, treat the symptoms of autism, or relieve the pain of cerebral palsy. But cannabis is not allowed on school grounds. KALW education reporter Lee Romney introduces us to one family trying to change that.
Mom, can you get here?
Four-year-old Brooke Adams is taking her morning medicine. Her mom, Jana Adams, squirts it into her mouth with a dropper as Brooke sits on the kitchen counter of their Santa Rosa house. It's a cannabis tincture with a high ratio of CBD, one of the cannabinoids in the marijuana plant that doesn't make you high. Brooke has pale red hair that's pulled into pigtails. She's wearing raspberry-colored eyeglasses, and she loves hugs. She has Dravet syndrome, a rare and severe genetic disorder that causes seizures and developmental delays. She'll live with it for the rest of her life. Adams says Brooke had her first seizure at 3.5 months.
She would have hour-long seizures. Every time we'd have to call 911 to have her ambulanced to the ER to load her up with all kinds of drugs. Her longest one was 3 hours.
By the time she turned one, Brooke was taking a long list of prescribed medications.
She was put on Keppra, then she was put on phenobarbital, then she was put on Trileptal, and then they put her on Topamax.
Medicines meant to prevent seizures, but Adams says they didn't work for Brooke. Stopping the seizures once they started, that required another drug known as a rescue medication. Whenever they administered it,
she would be intubated because her breathing would slow down so much.
Adams connected with a nationwide community of parents using cannabis to treat their kids' seizures. And a local doctor issued Brooke a medical marijuana card when she was just 15 months old. Now, Brooke takes that daily CBD tincture and a rescue drug made of cannabis oil that's high in THC. That's the best-known cannabinoid in the marijuana plant, the one that does get you high.
It's been life-changing.
Often stopping the seizures within 3 minutes, Adams says. Brooke's doses come in little vials. Wherever she goes, they go.
We have these pre-measured. So this is the THC. And so every seizure, we give her one of these. It's just oil, and you drop it in front of her gums before her teeth.
Brooke takes fewer prescription meds now, and her mom says she has fewer seizures. But the main change is that those long ones, known as status seizures, are really infrequent. That means no more ambulance trips with a breathing tube.
Her last status seizure was last August. But, and before she was every 5 weeks to the day.
Last year, Adams met with her local school district, Rincon Valley Union, to plan for preschool. There's a federal law which mandates that kids receive a free, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. That means districts need to make accommodations for kids like Brooke. But just before the summer of 2016, the district told Adams, those vials of THC oil that are always with Brooke, they're not allowed at school.
They said, here's all the things that you could, you know, have, but, well, she can't be on campus, so you'll have to just have her at home.
Homeschooled. but that's not what Adams thought was most appropriate for Brooke.
And I said, no, actually, this is not where she needs to be.
Adams knew the law. If the district couldn't accommodate Brooke, they'd have to find another school that would.
And so then summer came, and I said, you know, she needs to go to private school if you can't have her.
The district got on board. Adams had to call dozens of private preschools to find one that had space and would accept Brooke with her seizures and cannabis meds. The district pays for that placement and a lot of other accommodations.
She has speech therapy, OT therapy, PT therapy, adaptive PE.
But Adams knew the problem wasn't going to go away, and that would be an issue after preschool.
And, I mean, that's why we're pushing to get to Sacramento and get something passed before the fall, because I don't know where her placement will be in the fall if she can't go to public school.
Adams hired a cannabis industry attorney to help her, because that something is a law, one that would allow Brooke and other kids like her to be in public school with their cannabis meds. The twist? The school district's on board with that, too. This is Kathy Myers, Assistant Superintendent for Student Services for the Rincon Valley Union School District.
When we're looking at the federal law that surrounds and protects children who are identified as children that have special needs, we are required to offer them a free and appropriate public education.
She can't discuss Brooke's case for privacy reasons, so she's speaking hypothetically.
And we feel as though our hands are tied that we can't do that if we can't offer a safe place for a student who needs this as a rescue medication. If we can't provide her that rescue medication, we can't serve her on a public school campus.
Meyer says her district had never dealt with this kind of situation before, but now they are, and they're hearing from other districts with similar dilemmas.
This week, I actually had a conference call with somebody from Nevada County, and we were both lamenting, how are we going to work through this?
And another call with the office of local state senator Mike McGuire to see if California can do what a handful of other states have already done. Maine, New Jersey, and Colorado have all changed state law to require school districts to accommodate students who have medical marijuana recommendations. That way, a parent, legal guardian, and in some cases a primary caregiver can administer cannabis medication at school. There's also similar legislation pending in Washington State. In California, state law right now forbids it.
There's California state health codes that limit us, and we can't have those. They're considered a drug, so they cannot be on campus.
And the recent law that governs legal marijuana for adults come January, it explicitly states no cannabis at schools. But that law could be modified. There's another problem, though, says Myers.
And then federal law, which we cannot have drugs, cannabis, anything within 1,000 feet of a school district or school.
They risk losing federal funding if they violate that. But Meyer said Maine, New Jersey, and Colorado might offer a roadmap.
We are reaching out to them to find out how are they getting around the federal restrictions.
It turns out they're basically ignoring those restrictions. But here's the thing. By legalizing marijuana, medical or recreational, tons of states already violate federal law. The states that have passed these school district measures are taking a gamble. They don't think the feds will act. Colorado's statute even says school districts can only get out of complying if they reasonably demonstrate that they already did and lost federal funding as a result. Whether California will do the same remains to be seen. For now, the workaround is working for Brooke, with the district paying for her to go to private preschool and providing lots of assistance.
We'll see Ivan later, okay?
Don't
have to go to school.
No, don't have to go to school.
That's Yolanda Brindis, a one-on-one nurse provided by the district. She gets to the house at 8 a.m. and stays close to Brooke all day.
Let's go.
Mom,
you want to ride the bus?
After some bumps in the road, the district also agreed to send a van to take Brooke to her preschool across town. Adams walks her daughter out.
Door. Here, let's put your sweater on, please.
Brooke wears leg braces for stability.
One, two.
She walks down the stairs to a big greeting from the driver.
Are you ready, Missy?
Thank you.
Morning, Brooke.
You know, I'm not going to smell that, but I'll use it to write.
Ooh,
Brooke and Yolanda get there right in time for speech therapy.
What color is that? What color?
Red.
Good job.
It's a red yo-yo.
Shake.
You put in?
Shake.
Put in?
More.
Look, it's an otter. Put in.
Brooke joins the other kids for circle time. Getting Brooke into preschool has immersed her in a whole world of other kids. It's also allowed her mom, Janet Adams, to go back to work as a real estate broker for the first time since Brooke was diagnosed. But what matters most now for Adams is what comes next.
I mean, my whole goal is to get her to public school by kindergarten. And if I didn't start it last year, I mean, it's already taken this long and we're closer, but we're still a ways off. And I don't know that we'll have the bills passed in order for her to go to school in time in August.
At what point did you realize, okay, we're going to be the family that gets that hopefully gets a bill passed in California?
Pretty much when they said that she couldn't go to school.
Adam's attorney tells me he'll work behind the scenes to help her and her school district move that legislation forward. Colorado's is called Jack's Law. New Jersey's was inspired by a girl named Jenny, and Maine's by young Cindy May, also diagnosed with Dravet syndrome. So maybe, Adam's attorney says, if they're successful in passing legislation that allows students to take their cannabis meds at school, California's should be called Brooke's Law. In Santa Rosa, I'm Lee Romney for Cross Currents.
Lee is KALW's education reporter. Reach out to her at education@kalw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. The legalization of marijuana has ignited a green rush, and entrepreneurs want to get into the cannabis industry now. Various studies project California marijuana sales to reach more than $6 billion by 2025. But starting a marijuana business is not so simple. There's a lot of rules and fees, especially if you're buying or selling the actual plant. As KALW's Janae Darden found out, people are finding many different routes into the industry.
Mark Herzman and Nick Porterlees became buddies back in the mid-2000s.
We actually go to the same church here in Alameda. That's where we met. We both share a love of hockey and sports.
That's Mark. He says they initially bonded over the San Jose Sharks. But in the next few months, their sports-based friendship may be tested. Because now they're business partners, cannabusiness.
And Mark and I have no doubt we want to bring this industry out of the shadows. There is a valid reason to use this plant as medicine.
The three of us take a walk down a busy Park Street in Alameda. The area's blend of old car repair shops with new restaurants show signs of gentrification. We stop just a few blocks from the Park Street Bridge.
We're close to Clement Avenue. This is a part of town that's changing. It's a very small part of town that they have reserved for cannabis businesses.
We're standing in front of a boarded up Irish bar. I see a worn building with faded red paint and a parking lot that needs repaving. But Nick sees a possible dream coming true.
This could be a potential location. It really all depends on the available space and the price. And of course, the condition of the building.
The city of Alameda recently passed an ordinance that allows for two medical dispensaries on the island. Mark says they're hoping to open one of those dispensaries next summer through their new company, Portman Enterprises. Then they've got their eyes on something new in the local marijuana scene, a cannabis-friendly social club.
A club that charges a monthly membership to members and allows them to come in and enjoy sort of a country club-style atmosphere and enjoy cannabis on the premises. So we're thinking things like full menu, food and beverage, a little bit of entertainment, pool tables and the like, and then also an events room that we can rent out for special events.
These guys may be new to the cannabis industry, but they're not new to marijuana. They consume for health reasons and are very passionate about legalization. Nick, who is Canadian, says watching his parents suffer through cancer inspired him to launch their business.
In the time that they were going through these difficult circumstances, there was this stigma around you know, using the plant to help them, to aid in whatever condition they were going through. My mother specifically in chemo.
Part of their motivation is personal, but they mean business too. Mark previously worked in finance at Charles Schwab, and Nick does IT for Nielsen. Mark says he's noticed two types of entrepreneurs in the industry.
There are cannabis people going into business, then there are business people going into cannabis. And we're business people going into cannabis.
Is there a difference?
Yeah, I think so. Particularly on the cultivation side is where you see a lot of cannabis people coming into business. So they have tremendous experience and technical skills in growing the plant and hydration techniques and all that sort of thing, which goes well beyond my scope of knowledge. But they don't know a lot about running a business and meaning payroll and regulation, audits and taxes and all that kind of stuff.
And whether someone is skilled with the soil or the spreadsheet, these businesses cost money to start. Mark says he and Nick need a lot to make their dream happen, a whole lot.
So moving forward with the dispensary first, we're probably looking at a $3 to $4 million capital raise. And then we'd be looking at something similar, probably $4 to $5 million on the social club. So we're looking at roughly $8, maybe $9 million total for both businesses.
Do you already have this money? Did you win the lottery before I spoke to you? how are you going to get this money?
We're funding it through Portman ourselves initially. If we can, as we apply for a license, secure that license, we will be going and conducting a capital raise and looking for investors.
Nick and Mark say they've already invested $100,000 of their own money, and that's just on research and development. Why so much? Real estate. They want to own their property because sometimes landlords are fickle when leasing to marijuana businesses. And because of federal laws, banks can pull loans on a landlord's building.
I mean, you really need at least a solid $250,000 to get your business launched.
Sharon Golden is a business consultant who works specifically with cannabis entrepreneurs. She's also founder of the Alameda Island Cannabis Community, a group of local residents advocating for safe and legal access within the city. We meet up at a cafe. She tells me Nick and Mark's personal investment is not uncommon.
I think that a lot of people that came out here felt like they were just going to get rich quick. This was going to be their big break. And in reality, it takes a lot of money to start one of these businesses. Compliance in general is a lot. The cost of the local permits, the state licensure now.
Sharon is referring to businesses like dispensaries, edibles, farms, testing sites. Ventures that involve actual handling of the plant pay a lot in licenses and permits.
The state licenses run anywhere from, you know, maybe $6,000 a year to $76,000. Micro businesses are $120,000 a year. So are they going to be able to make enough money to secure and keep on getting that annual permit? Because it's really an astronomical price.
Add to that packaging, manufacturing, machinery, security, then there's the taxes.
There's going to be 15% sales tax, and then your local 9.25 sales tax. So you're looking at a 25% sales tax on the consumer at the end of the day.
There's also room in the green rush for businesses that don't actually sell marijuana, like Sharon. Her business consultant rates start at $50 per hour. So how can someone without the capital get in on the action? I head over to Oakland, where Nate Cameron welcomes me to his home with music from his band, MJ's Brass Boppers. He's a musician. His wife, Crystal, is a communications and digital consultant. The couple moved here from New Orleans 2 years ago and founded Them People Productions, a company that provides safe social spaces for people of color. Come January, they're expanding into the cannabis industry.
We as Black people, you know, we've had this stigma on us.
you know, relating to marijuana usage.
So as far as cannabis is concerned, we are actively putting together events where people of color who have usually felt and been more persecuted as far as recreational usage of cannabis has gone, can feel safe and enjoy their cannabis in a space that feels comfortable.
They're planning events like parties or artist gatherings where attendees smoke while painting or playing an instrument. Crystal and Nate were inspired to host cannabis-focused functions after attending others that lack diversity.
You know, there's always the head nod, you know, when you see that one other Black couple that's walking around like, ah, you're here. And I know that in those spaces, I haven't always felt the most comfortable because I'm not of the demographic that's well-protected in that space.
Nate began planning cannabis events years ago during a stint in Amsterdam. He recently brought his party planning skills to the wealthy white suburb of Woodside.
So it was just a big retirement party, a big safe space at this home. I kind of pointed folks in the direction of a couple of vendors, kind of very proud that it was people of color cannabis vendors there, and it was a person of color DJ.
In researching this story, I've learned of people teaching blunt rolling classes, leading weed and wine tours, giving Cajun cannabis cooking demos. Even lawyers and marketers have specialized cannabis practices. Most of these businesses cost far less to start and don't require permits. Like Crystal and Nate, there are lots of people out there hoping they can ride the cannabis wave using their current trade skills without spending lots of money.
We'll get a venue, and sometimes the venue will be a partner, so we don't have to put in an investment. We just share whatever the income from the, you know, ticket sales are. We pay our artists usually out of that money. I think in the very beginning, the most we had been invested in an event was maybe $1,500.
$1,500 is more my speed. I admit this is all new to me. I don't consume, so I was surprised by how many layers there are to venturing into the cannabis industry and how many different ways people are trying to cash in and make their fortune. But I wonder, will regulations and the high value of marijuana change cannabis culture?
The product itself is about community and sharing. It's such, you know, you don't roll a joint and smoke it yourself. You don't make edibles and do it yourself. It is to share with other people.
And maybe share the wealth too. For Cross Currents, I'm Janae Darden.
Find more stories about legalized marijuana at our website, kalw.org. The Cross Currents team includes Asal Asanapur, Nina Gensler-Debs, Raquel Maria Dillon, Zaina Nasser, Stephen Short, Andrew Stelzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. Our line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. The music you're hearing right now is by experimental musician Fred Frith. He's usually teaching composition and music at Mills College, but tomorrow he'll be performing at the Starline Social Club in Oakland. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney. Yeah.